Howdy, folks, and welcome to another episode of the Problematic Fave Podcast. This is episode 3 of season 2, and we welcome Add to Cart co-hosts Suchin Pak and Kulap Balaisak. You also may know Suchin Pak as a iconic MTV News journalist, also an author, and just an overall great person. And you may know Kulap Balaisak from a show called Bajillion Dollar Properties, also a very talented writer. They both host Add to Cart, which is a wonderful pod that I've been a guest on. They are on this episode during Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, so I decided in the middle, towards the end of this podcast, to name this the official Asian Pacific American Heritage Month podcast for the Problematic Fave Podcast. And what better way to celebrate this month with the Office episode titled A Benihana Christmas, which also featured Kulap Balaisak. So we had a lot to say about The Office and A Benihana Christmas, this two-part episode of the third season of The Office. We all love The Office, but if you've watched A Benihana Christmas before, then you're in for a treat because this is hella racist, but also interesting, and also gave Kulap this amazing career. So again, this is why we call the podcast Problematic Fave. So without further ado, here is Kulap Balaisak and Suchin Pak. So please enjoy.
What can I get for you?
I think we'll start with a round of Nagasake.
One part eggnog, three parts sake.
My compliments to the chef, which is you.
Where's my girl? Is she in the fridge?
Hey, you.
Hey, how are you?
This party blows, so we're gonna leave.
Then suddenly she's not your hoe, no mo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Problematic Fave Podcast. This week, in honor of Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, I have two icons of the industry, of both media and the dramatics. We have, and
keep going. I'll try if I hear anything that isn't true.
I'm operating a lie detector on my side. Yes. Everything is
green lights. Everything is.
And yeah. You've heard their voices. They are the co-hosts of the award-winning, the spectacular Add to Cart podcast, which recently had a show on May 17th, by the way. But anyways, here we have today's guests, Suchin Pak and Kulap Balaisak of Add to Cart fame. Welcome.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for having us.
When I was saying dramatics, I wasn't saying that you were extra or anything like that. I was saying that you were in the arts of the theater and TV and film. Mm-hmm. I've been reading a lot of Tennessee Williams lately. So I've been in my glass menagerie era, as I have posted on Instagram, and I've been trying to talk like him.
It's very specific. I didn't know that was an era, but I am aware now.
Well, it's my era. It's my personal era that I created, called the Glass Menagerie era. Y'all, thank you all so much. And on Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, no less.
Yes, our month of power.
Our month of power. I have two. I have next month
back
as well.
Back to back.
Back to back.
Back to back. I mean, you better take another sip of that protein shake.
Yeah.
This is really, I don't like this. It's like strawberries and cream, but it tastes like children's medicine.
And it is bright. Listeners, it is neon pink.
I
don't want to name the brand. I don't want to name the brand just in case they want to,
give you money.
And then you'll
give me money.
We'll all
happily drink this. I'll happily drink this.
Us too, by the way. Us too.
I'll happily.
For sale.
For sale. But before we get into the what we picked, I mean, it's in the title. We'll talk about that in a little bit. I want to talk about something all of us in this room attended, but I did not know that one of us was there.
the Gold Gala. I did not know Soo-Chin was there until I saw pictures.
But that was, there were so many Asians, it was impossible to see but a fraction.
I was still finding out people were there well after. Last week I found out Chad Hugo was there. I didn't even know he was there.
This is news. This is news to me.
What you got to do when you go to that is just sit in the bathroom lounge downstairs. That's what I did. I saw
everyone. Oh, you did?
Well, first of all,
that's where I was the entire time.
It, you know, you might as well stay there. It's a trek to get there. Especially if you're in heels and then go, you're traipsing down. You're spelunking down.
And everybody comes through. You just sit there. They have a banquette. It's a beautiful lounge area.
Well, I might as well sat there because no one was paying attention to the presentation. No shade to anyone, but you put about 800 Asians in a space and you expect them to pay attention? Some of us who hasn't seen each other in for so long. That is...
And we look good? Please.
And we all look so hot. We looked so hot. It was horny that night. It was so hot. It was horny. Wait, Soo-Chin, did you really stay down? How long did you stay down in the banquet restroom area for a good minute?
Oh, I would say the last on and off, pretty much the last 2 hours.
Even during the party?
Not make it to the party, sweetie.
And I left the dinner before.
The dinner was like 4 hours long. Halfway through the dinner, I said, it's time for me to go to the bathroom. And I don't know. I came up maybe.
And then you
just
never came back. And you never came back.
No.
And you never came back.
No, I didn't.
Oh, God bless. I barely made it to the after party. Like, I was like, oh my God, this is a lot of people. I need to go home. And by that time, it was like almost midnight. And
the children were raging until 3.
Listen, we can't anymore. Okay, yeah. And speaking of that, you know, I want to say I am an auntie like you. And this solidified the other day. I went to this another Asian event, Southeast Asian brunch.
Ah, yes.
And then I
couldn't attend. I was invited, Dito. I was invited, but I couldn't attend.
I was gonna ask after I tell my story, but I was like looking at, of course it was a potluck and there were a bunch of desserts, pies, I bought donuts and an ube leche flan cake. It was so, ooh, there was a lot. And then I was just like looking and there was like this butter mochi and I was all yum. And then I was eating it and then like one of my younger friends was like, oh, what are you eating? I was all butter mochi because I wanted something sweet but not too sweet. And then he was all, okay, auntie. And I was all, oh my God, it's official. I've known it all along, but to have the validation from an outside source makes it kind of, I feel, you know.
Brought down to auntie. You're grounded in your auntiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I want to connect with y'all on that.
Welcome, so. Welcome.
Yeah, and also I
welcome
went
to our table.
I was born an auntie. If that's the criteria, then sweet but not too sweet. I out of the womb. That was my first phrases.
But also butter mochi is kind of like the perfect because I think it's like sweet but not too sweet. And also I went to sleep like at 10 p.m. last night, and I was just like. And I woke up at 6 a.m. this morning, like bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
This is it. this is part of your glass menagerie era. You're pulling in a lot of things.
It is. I mean, I know y'all have children, but I have no children. I'm just like me, you know? What does that even mean? I think both of y'all looked spectacularly gorgeous. At the Goldale. I mean, I saw you in pictures, Soo-Chin. I didn't see you in person because apparently I didn't know you were there.
I saw Dino on the carpet. And yeah, so, I
needed to get that picture taken for my stylist and the person who designed that thing because that was a journey and I loved it.
Oh, you look fantastic. You had basically a train.
Yeah. Well, me and my stylist, Mark Paul, called it a scrain. So it was a scarf train.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was a barong. I'm going to post about it some more, guys, listeners. Don't worry, because I paid good money for that. And so I'm going to wear it to my parents' 50th anniversary that my mom my mom volunteered me to MC.
Auntie, this is auntie behavior.
Yeah,
like,
so she.
How do I justify spending money? Let me cut the waist.
Stretch it out.
I said a younger a nibbling a niece texted said, "Oh my God, that dress was so beautiful, practical." I said, "I'm sending it to you because you should also wear it. It would make me feel better if I could." Send this dress around and other people got to wear it. That way I feel like I got my maximum discounted dress price for that.
Sujin wants all products, all clothes to be like Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants.
Yes.
Oh, I was about to say that.
Yeah. That's what she wants. Lipstick.
I would not. Lipstick. Correct. Yes. What about like cold sores and stuff?
I mean, the circle, I trust the circle that if that is an affliction of yours, that you won't partake in that particular month's rotation.
Well, you know,
and
what?
Also, doesn't everybody have herpes?
A little bit. Wait, isn't it like, I mean, you're onto something there, but not, I'm picturing more of like, well, at first I pictured more of like a chain letter thing where you're sending stuff to random strangers, but you want to keep it like in.
I want it back.
A club.
Yes.
Club. Oh yeah. Oh,
not,
oh that's
not
be clear.
No. Not like a library. Like
no,
where
no,
you,
no, 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 no. It's okay, not open to the public. No, no.
Oh, it's not like a take a book, leave a book thing or take a penny, leave a penny.
She wants it back.
You need to develop that into something because I feel like you're onto something, and I think some people would be down with it. I think the auntie contingent, you know. Also, before I mean, I know we're taking our time, but I want to say this. Why can't Rent the Runway be like? I mean, for male people, like people more, you know, people who identify as male, like. I was like, oh, I'm jealous that there's all, well, also for like non-binary people and everything, but
yes,
but it's all female. And I'm just like, I want to dress
up. It's totally true. We were, because we had talked about this when we were raving about, there was another rental service and I was doing research. I'm like, oh, I wonder if there are for folks who identify as male, and there isn't. There literally
there's
is
like
not one.
One that's kind of, but it does it, the it's more like formal wear, but then it's limited.
It's like a tuxedo rental.
Yeah, basically. And it's not what we all want, because Sujin and I would shop there too.
Correct.
Yeah. Or maybe it's just like getting, you know, for men's clothing in general, or people who want to wear more masculine presenting clothing, because like there's no, like we could go to Men's Warehouse or like Al's formal wear or whatever, and but it's like, oh, I think men want to have fun too, right?
Yes.
There's other people who like dressing up is fun, y'all. I want to say that I love dressing up. Right now, obviously not.
As a cart, yes.
So let's get to where we are. What we're supposed to be talking about? Look at us. I'm just a bunch of aunties getting off topic.
Just three hens clucking
just
about.
Just three hens clucking about. Oh, okay. So, Gulab and Sujin chose a very special episode of The Office. The Office, which we all love, you know, created by Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant, the BBC version, and then adapted by Greg Daniels. But this particular episode is called The Benihana Christmas, directed by Harold Ramis,
the
icon. The late and great icon. He also directed, I think, three or four other episodes. If y'all don't know him, he directed Caddyshack, National Lampoon's Vacation, Groundhog Day, and Bedazzled, starring Oscar winner Brendan Fraser. And he was, of course, Egon Spengler, and Ghostbusters. And written by Jennifer, I guess, Salota, I want to say, is how you pronounce her last name. So a quick just like a summary of the episode via Wikipedia for the listeners. In the episode, Christmas time at the office leads to depression for Michael when his girlfriend, Carol, Nancy Walls, Steve Carell's real life wife, by the way, breaks up with him. Michael, Andy, Dwight, and Jim then go to a local Benihana restaurant where Michael and Andy find dates with two of the restaurant's waitresses. We'll get into that. back at the office, after a conflict with the bossy Angela, Karen and Pam decide to create their own Christmas party. When the majority of the office decide to go to Karen and Pam's party, Angela becomes upset. Seeing this, Karen and Pam decide to combine both parties. Andy and Michael's dates come back with them to these parties. And what ends up happening, Michael is unable to tell the two waitresses apart. To remedy this, he secretly marks his date's arm with a Sharpie.
Hey, where's my girl?
I marked her arm.
When he offers to take her to Jamaica, she declines.
Nah, I have school.
And the two waitresses leave the party because it, quote unquote, blows. And then, like, Michael ends up going to Jamaica, and there's a whole thing there. But one of the people in this room appeared in this episode.
I would say central to this episode. Without her, this episode does not exist.
Exactly. So Kula.
Yes,
before
hello.
Before we even, Kula, you starred, you should have won an Emmy for this. if there was like, you know what, if there was like back in this time when this episode was released, I think it was, I forgot when it was like this, or here it goes.
2006.
Oh, this was right before, this is right before the strike too, I'm guessing, into 2007. I think this episode, but first off, let's just hear from you. I'm just very curious to hear your journey with this episode from when you first kind of got the script and like when you auditioned, and just to explain to the viewers how things were back in the day when it came to representation and all of that good stuff. But yeah, give us a Cliff Notes version.
Absolutely.
And then like from the beginning to seeing it on screen to seeing it now.
Yeah. So this was my big network break. I was 26 at the time, and BJ Novak was, I knew him from alt comedy scenes, and he was like, hey, I suggested you for a role, you're gonna get a call. And at that point I was doing stuff at UCB, doing commercials, this type of thing, trying auditioning. I don't know if maybe some under five stuff, but this was like my big break. And this is for the first time I auditioned for Allison Jones, who is a big comedy casting director. Mm-hmm. And it was a ball. It was this amazing thing that happened. It was my start. And I got to do it with comedy legends, with Harold Ramis at the helm. I knew Mindy, I knew BJ, I had met Ed Helms before, I knew Craig Robinson, I loved Steve Carell, I was a huge fan of The British Office, so this was a literal dream come true. And you know, there wasn't like Such and I have talked about this before, I haven't seen this episode in over a decade. Like forgot so much about it, but all I have are pretty good memories. And then during the pandemic, my co-star kind of in a time when we were talking about AAPI hate, when things were happening our community was in pain and was thinking about all of the microaggressions and all of the like, all the shit that we deal with and have dealt with, and we put our heads down and we rarely say things to each other about it. She came out, I think, on social media to talk about our episode, and that got picked up by a bunch of different outlets, and she has a a take that's different than mine, but I know not no less untruthful. And everything that she says, she's, you know, she's like basically was like, this was a racist episode, and lays it out and how it was like, yeah, that's absolutely right. That's I cannot dispute it. And at the same time, I can say that this was like the beginning of a career for me and a wonderful time for me. And I speak that in a place of privilege because, you know, I got to do from her perspective. I mean, even though we were in the scene together, like I, you know, it was that for me and maybe not for her. Do you see? So it's like, and Sucha and I can talk about her MTV days and prior to MTV days too, just like in this whole power dynamic, I said yes. There's so many things that and maybe when I pass you guys, there'll be a bunch of Funnier Dive videos. It'll be all horrible things that I've done and put shame upon my family. If we did a super cut of all of the things I did with accents and tits out, I mean, it's not going to look great. Like, it's not. And yet I have to stand by every choice that I made to because I was building something. I was building something. I was navigating this town and, you know, it took, you know, there's been progress in representation, but, you know, when I would go to pilot seasons, like, and they were looking for like the third best friend or like never the lead. I look at the waiting room. And when I tell you that a diversity of Asian people for the same sort of bland role, to be like the friend that, you know, is like of 22 episodes shows up in like 13 or like, you know what I mean? You know, and you're just like, man, I hope this changes. Yeah. And yet that change, that this episode changed a lot for me.
Oh yeah. Let's talk about the show. We're supposed to be talking about this episode. Show
because I've never seen an episode of The Office. I've seen. I've seen clips.
Wow,
I've seen.
This is your first.
Okay,
first episode.
Forget that.
I know what it's about. You know what I mean? I know what it's about. I could tell you the characters. I mean, there are, you know, if you are in pop culture in any sense, you've seen these clips over and over again. So it wasn't like foreign to me. But so I watched it last night with my husband, who is white, and my kids. The kids thought it was hilarious. So obviously they didn't get it. But my husband was like, but Steve Carell's character, he is an asshole. He's stupid. He's racist. He's sexist. He's, you know, a disgusting human being. Lovable, yes, in some respects, because he's kind of a bumbling idiot.
Yeah, so, he's the clown.
Yeah, so he kind of was like, yes, I see how racist this is, 100%. But it's because it was Steve Carell's character. Like, he's a comedy guy. So for him, he was like juggling between like, where do we stand? Because he's like, this is one of the funniest episodes of The Office.
It is.
And he's like, it's an iconic episode. And so it wasn't that he was defending it. He was just a bit lost in that kind of take on it. Right. Which I was like, I appreciate the white man's take. Thank you.
Oh, it's always something that we have to consider. We don't have a choice.
It was funny. Okay. I do have to say, I like gasped, you know, in horror and laughter.
Yeah. They call Benihana Asian Hooters.
Jim, Dwight, Ryan, come on. We're going to Asian Hooters.
Oh man, I can't.
Why not?
I'm not feeling so well. I got a ton of work to do here. MSG allergy, peanut allergy. I just ate there last night.
Hey, feel better.
Yeah. And the way Kula plays the character, she's like both like, don't give a fuck.
Yes.
You know, she doesn't, her character isn't like, oh, what's that? You know what I mean? She seems very much like, I'm here for the free stuff and the free food and then I'm out, right?
Auntie energy.
Yes, auntie energy, but also like, who cares, you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So, but I do think, yes. And so it does ride the line.
Angela says, I don't come and steal the Hello Kitty backpack your house.
Yes.
No, that's like, yeah.
That and when Steve Carell's character marks you on the arm is when I'm like, okay. We must all exit the room. We must all exit the room.
And this has been talked about a lot.
Yeah.
Which is just like, they tried for something that didn't work, which as written, first of all, it was supposed to be just one episode.
Yeah.
And it got split to two. Great. But originally what it was is that Brittany Ishibashi, who I'm friends with, I met on the shoot, still friends with, she and her coworker were like the hot Asians. And so what was written was that Steve asks her, the hot Asians, to come back, and they say no. So they have to downgrade themselves with me and Catherine.
That's not what the episode was.
The less good-looking Asians. And
that
so
is,
then,
okay.
I beg to differ. Okay. I beg to differ. Look, you are smoking hot.
And oh my smoking God. Yes. Hot. Yes. And that hair. That hair.
Oh my God.
Was just giving 2006 CRL.
The eyebrows.
And to add is like, so if you look at my makeup from when we enter to all my other scenes, I have makeup on in that first scene. They have pink and purple because that's what ugly girls wear apparently. And then between scenes, they took all my makeup off.
Why?
So I'm not wearing any because I need to be, they wanted to try downgraded. To sell that idea. And it didn't work.
It didn't work.
And it didn't work.
Well, that joke was totally lost. That's not my business. That's not. Yeah. That's not my business. I didn't get that joke at all. Yeah. That didn't work.
The joke that I thought that was that Steve and Andy, or like not Steve, Michael and Andy were just dumb and they just took any two Asians from the restaurant back with them. That's what I thought the joke was.
That's what they ended up doing in the editing, basically. Yeah, but that wasn't what was on in the script.
My God.
When you're reading that and you see it when
in
you're
black
reading
and
the
white.
Script, you know, you don't like it. It doesn't feel good.
That's terrible.
It doesn't
that's fucking
you know.
Terrible.
I mean, it's like, oh my God, this, I mean,
but again,
I can't.
Had a great time.
But you know what? You know Gracious. What? You got your coin. You got access. You built your career. You made friends. And it was like, this is the thing. It's like, oh, we know it's not coming from a place of harm, but it's going to harm. Because like I said, like Suchin, I was just like, this is such a funny ass episode. I know we shouldn't feel guilty for laughing, but it's just like, I was like watching it and I was like, okay, why am I laughing? Am I laughing because it's so racist that it's ridiculous? Or then am I just laughing because of the ignorance of the white man? Or just like everything.
The thing is that, okay, let me ask the group this. So if in the end of the episode, Kulop's character somehow gets the upper hand, right? She either gets the joke or she calls someone out on it or something like that. Mm. Calls the elephant in the room. Would this episode still be problematic?
Ooh.
Well, no, because even another thing is like, I was thinking about this too. When he's with his boys in the office and he says, you know how all waitresses look alike.
My little gal over there, Babe Electable.
Which one is she?
Dude, you should know.
Yeah, well, it's been hard to wear the exact same uniform. And I've been drinking. And you know how all waitresses look alike.
Yeah. Yes. If one of those guys said like, hey, if there was one guy and they didn't all co-sign on it and laugh, if Mindy Kaling was anywhere near where they were
but
discussing
that happened, yeah.
That speaks to that time, and it also speaks to the time in alt comedy, which is by and large very liberal white, but now in this post-woke age has leaned more far right. But like there was a thing, and dear friends of mine who would use their like their themselves, and Sarah Silverman has talked about this and has owned up to this, where I'm musing and playing the fool, but there's like, you seem like you're having a lot of fun saying these racist things.
Yeah.
Like, we're using the shield of humor to actually, and that was all of the 2000s. Like that's what it was. And that's what, as a girl who like, cut my teeth at Second City into UCB.
Yeah.
Like that's what, you know, that was it. That was it all of the time. It's like, yeah, I don't believe it, but it's like, I don't know. You know, I don't think you're saying that ironically. Like you're enjoying it too much.
Some people
like getting away with it. Like, so that's what this was as well.
No, but what you were saying, I was like, I wrote this down and I was all, why isn't anyone saying anything? Like, I feel like about how these, you know, waitresses are being treated, or like about how ignorant, like, I feel like this was so kind of like, okay, you know,
like Jim says nothing. The
same thing. Yeah, Jim says things nothing.
All the time. Jim says nothing. Like, Jim's like, it's adorable.
He's like, he'll like look at the camera and then he'll do that. Also, nothing. You know, by the way, everyone, I do not like Jim. He is a bully. He bullied Dwight. I do not like him. I just want to put that on the record. John Krasinski's fine. The character of Jim, I do not like. Anyways, back to the episode. I think it's just what Suchin, what you're saying. I think you're right. It wouldn't be funny because
John Krasinski's sort of how he maybe redeems is a strong word, but redeems the joke is so bizarre when he says, yeah, but to Steve Carell's character, he says, oh yeah, but you had a rebound because he had just broken up. He was so sad for so much of the episode. And so for Steve's character, he spun it. It was supposed to be a very sweet thing. And I think people read it as sweet of like, oh, well, you know, you had a rebound. Like, don't feel so badly. These girls, these waitresses who you, shat on all night, walked out of the party, you had a rebound, you had your first rebound, like you're getting over your ex. And so Steve goes into his confessional, that's how the episode ends, right? Like kind of on a high note. And I was like, what?
Like what is resolved?
How is that the joke? I was like, where did we spin this? Now he's higher? I'm like, wait a minute, hold on a second. How does a white man win whiter and more manner at the end of this episode? So to me, I was like, I understand people's argument of like comedy, you know, wins like that. A lot of things hide behind that. But I would argue it would have been funnier if Steve had been called out and for that behavior in the end, because the joke is still, I mean, to me, I was like, that's even funnier than this rebound joke that came out of nowhere. And I was like, oh, that was so schlocky and not funny.
Something similar happens in the episode where Oscar's character comes out as gay. Spoiler alert, Zuchin,
right?
You know.
Oh my God. Wait, I didn't know this. And Mike, my husband, goes, oh my God, that's when he comes out. And I was dying because he says, he goes, too soon or not now. What does he say?
He comes in and he goes, too soon.
Too soon.
But like, because I think of that episode and Oscar does stand up for himself.
Correct.
And then they make it into comedy at the end.
Right.
And that is actually, I feel like that queer episode, or that there are problems with it, don't get me wrong, but how they handled it for that era, which was still kind of like the alt comedy era, was actually kind of ahead of its time. I was all, oh, this is kind of mindful and thoughtful in how they handled Oscar's queerness. And one is just straight up like, oh, you could replace that Asian character with any other ethnicity and then, you know, it will be fine, you know?
Yeah.
Which is like kind of not good. I want to like also ask to this, you know, where we're, like, you said the post-woke era and all of it all and all that good stuff. And how I was talking about everyone so eager to be mad and confront something. Do you think, when do you think something can be over-policed? Like, is there such a thing as over-policing, especially with media these days? Like,
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, because I even catch myself sometimes when I'm all, Dino, reel it in a little bit, you know, it's choose your battles, you know, but I kind of struggle with that, with the over-policing of it all.
I know, I mean, post like Me Too and everything that's going on, it's like, I kind of am okay with like things, you know, being as messy as they are, because I think that's what happens when the status quo gets a little shook. And I just don't believe that anybody ever gets canceled for real. Like, I just don't believe cancel culture is like really real, in my opinion, because it's like the internet, you know, but it's also we don't have the, you know, spring awakening in the Middle East without social media. So it's like, I don't know. It's all weird. Yeah, it's all weird and necessary and unnecessary at the same time.
How about like how y'all handle kind of policing, or in terms of like, especially, you know, both of y'all are mothers now, and like,
you say it like that, Jesus, it was like a slur.
Oh my, did I say it rudely?
Mothers.
I meant to say like mothers, like lovingly. Did I look like trash? Sorry. I apologize.
Joking. I'm joking.
I apologize.
That's how I say mother, by the way, so.
Especially as Asians, you know, I'm still learning to stand up for myself. You know, I'm still learning to advocate for myself. Where do you guys kind of like have that moment where you're like, oh, okay, I need to say something because something's wrong here? Or do you kind of just immediately do it, or do you kind of feel it out? I struggle with that. I'm just curious, you know, how like y'all know, especially as women, you know, in this space, especially in this industry and media in general.
I mean, for me, my kids are 9 and 10. And so, you know, they're just transitioning into that stage in their life where the outside world is more of an influence than the home world, right? So up until a certain age, like, you are the bubble in which they eat, breathe, and sleep. And so, but to me, how I handle it is like, there's a temperature of the water in our house, in your life, in the conversations that we have, in everything that happens here, that is always going to be this, which is respectful, which is aware, which is, you know, empathetic, et cetera. So for me, it's never about a moment. It's all moments. Every single moment I have, if something comes up casually, if something happened, I'd be, you know, reading something, if I'm working on a project, whatever it is, like, for me, it's like, I want this to be the background conversation of your life, always. Like, I want you to come into this so that when you go out into the world, like, it's a given. Everything that we have fought for and learned is an absolute given. So I think because we are who we are and we've had the experiences, it's really easy to do that. I mean, it comes up, you know, randomly, but it comes up kind of all the time. You know, the other day I was doing like a little giveaway of a book that I wrote an introduction to, and they came in while I was like writing the address.
Oh, that's books right over there on my shelf.
Yes. And you know, so then they're like, oh, what are you doing? Oh, I'm doing this. Remember this book, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I did this post because I thought banned books, you know, so it's like, we had this big conversation about banned books and some of these authors. And what does it mean to have, well, when you can't, you know, find an author in a library because they have a different point of view, like, what does that do? So it's not like I scheduled in a moment or it happened and I thought, okay, I'm going to wait for the perfect moment to have this conversation. To me, it's like, it's just always running in the background. Like, I never want you to feel like you have to, it just is your life. Like, this is how you should look at the world, is through this lens. These are my kids, you know, I'm not going to, you know, do that with someone else's children.
Yeah.
But that's kind of how I see those conversations happening.
Mm. My girl is just, my baby's just 7 months old. But I will be raising her in the spirit of Hana. And
which is?
I'm just going to prepare for war.
Oh, yeah, yeah, prepare for war.
Just so knives, prepare for guns. War.
Yes. Knives.
As soon as she walks.
Secret identities.
Hand combat, of course.
Hand-to-hand combat, close combat.
Krav Maga.
Krav Maga.
Krav Maga
also
wrote horses.
Again, background dialogue.
Background dialogue.
Just like just running in the background. I love
it. Yeah, ropes, a ropes course, you know, ropes what else?
What else? Well, you know, a baby can learn how to swim quickly, and I hear parkour. I think parkour is something that...
Oh, my God.
That's something that... No, truly, I, you know, it's going... This is all going to be its own adventure because I grew up in a violent household. I'm violent. Mm-hmm. I went and saw John Wick opening day at 10 a.m. And this issue...
You're violent.
I'm, like, I'm violent. I enjoy violence. It is a button. The race card is a button, and it's going mm-hmm. to be very I will be challenged when, and unfortunately this is the truth, inevitably when she is confronted and like prejudiced upon because of her race, mm-hmm. How I will react and how I will be an adult will be it will be a test more for me than her, you know. And that's coming,
you know. What's
coming.
Interesting, Ku, at least with my experience, I think as they get older, it'll be different, but it's more when they are perpetrators, a wrong word because they're so bad. Young, when they are the ones mm-hmm. to sort of, and it's more that yeah. than other kids, which is oof. Way more complicated and way ooh, more wounding. And so like, you know, ooh. I have parents who live close by, and they're like, there's not one American cell in their body. I mean, they're just, they don't speak any English. They don't.
Yeah.
And so as they're getting older, I, for instance, like my daughter was in the back seat with her friend and they were having played it, and I was going somewhere and I wanted to call my mom really quick. So I, you know, on the car phone, you know, I just kind of absentmindedly, because I'm so used to it, I called my mom. And when I use Siri to call my mom, my daughter's like, please don't. That's so embarrassing. And so I kind of paused on it. And so I was like, let me investigate that. So later I was like, what was embarrassing about that? Just the fact that I was on speakerphone, you know, the fact that it was grandparents, the fact that I was going to speak Korean, the fact that, you know, and so we kind of went down the road. And what we ended up getting into was that. And let's not get into the sideline, but she said, no, because you're always screaming at her. Okay, so.
Well, we all really, scream at our mom.
Yes.
We all scream at our mom.
Yes, and she didn't want to be embarrassed. Right. And so, okay. Anyway, right. But, okay. So we, okay, I got, but you know, I really needed to investigate that. But, yeah. You know, in there could be the subtext of like,
yeah.
The language, because she may not be aware that that's where, you know, I don't think at that age, you're even aware of why you're embarrassed. It just something about it, you know, whatever is telling you is not normal.
I mean, I tried to think, it's like, oh, well, when I was younger, I was made fun of for the food I ate, you know, yeah. and then yeah. like, of course, you know, they read one story about Filipinos eating dogs or some shit like that. And they're like, oh my God, Dina, are you eating dog for dinner? And I'm all, you know what? What the hell? But I totally get that, because I even got embarrassed when my mom or my dad were speaking loudly Tagalog in public. Yeah. I would be all, you know, it's, I guess, I don't know. Even like, I don't know. It's
complicated. But, yeah. When it's because they're going to go inward first. They're not, I think that luckily maybe we're raising our children in, you know, bigger cities. So, you know, there's more diversity and there's more awareness. So I feel like at this age, it's less from the outside inflicting, much more of an internal kind of battle that both our kids are, you know, they're both Asian and white.
Oh, biracial. And, yeah. I was gonna ask that. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that aspect of it, because, you know, even when I'm planning a trip to Korea, I have very frank conversations about like, it is very strange for me to be in a place where everybody looks like me, everybody eats the same food I eat, you know, because I grew up in a world where, you know, blah, blah, blah. So we have this whole conversation, and they're still piecing together, well, where do I fit in that? And that'll continue and that'll evolve. But right now it's very much a like internal investigation of what identity means to them.
I mean, Sujin, remember when stuff happened to my Kai, my nephew Kai?
Yeah.
My nephew Kai, I don't know, maybe it was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. There was an incident at a school where these kids just, it was about him being Asian. It was about, he was bullied. It was a whole thing where he had to leave. The end, he had to leave school. And like, I was like, am I going to go beat up these children? Like, I guess I'll get a flight and I'll beat up me and my brother-in-law. I'm like, I'm going to need the principal's phone number. And I had it and I kept going, I'm just trying. Even that was a test for me, you know, just like, cause it's like, and Sujin said, it's like, what I want to do is impossible, which is to protect him from any pain.
Yeah.
I want to put him in just a little bubble because I don't want him to like, for me and my sister, I mean, we were just like crying cause it hit.
Yeah.
It just triggered and kicked up stuff in my own thing, you know, and I'm just like, why is this still happening? Like, why this is like so many years later and it's all things, but like the kids are, well, not all kids are all right all the time, but like cut to 2 years later, he decides to go back to that school and is completely fine and happy. He went back, you know, and he plays basketball and like he wanted it's a better school for basketball, like that's where his mind's at, and that went away, you know, but there was just a series. I mean, it just was like I couldn't, you know, I it was so painful,
so tricky.
And so I just
painful.
Think
I was gonna say, they say around about age 9, and Sujin, I'm kind of in a way just regurgitating what she said, but they say around age 9 is when, like, that's kind of when it's a transition point. That's when you get hit by what the world sees you at you and judgment just starts to fling in and affects you in ways that hadn't prior. And they say as adults, if you're stuck and you're like, I don't know if I'm doing the right things, I don't know if this is the right career, is to go back to what, like when you were 9 and a little younger. What did you like doing then? And that to get you back on track is just to either...
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Because I'm going through a midlife crisis right now. So I'm like trying to figure out where I'm going next. So I need to figure out what I was thinking when I was 9 or 10. Or 11.
What were your interests? What were your interests around 9?
Oh my God. I don't know.
Did you draw? It sounds like you were watching TV.
Sounds like you're right where you should be.
Ooh, sorry, Dino.
Sorry, Dino. You're fine. But I listened to Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey's podcast, but they played Pam and Angela on the show.
Yeah, The Office Ladies.
And they spilled the tea on this. They like really went into it. And of course, everyone realizes this show or this episode is a problem. They discussed this at length with the writer, as well as Rashida Jones, played by Karen Filippelli. I think, who said this? Well, so this is what Rashida said about, was this Rashida? Yeah, Rashida said about the character of Michael Scott. What works about Michael is this delicate balance between full cringe and well-intentioned, lovable, bad boss. And to watch it now in the current climate like that, balance feels different. Okay, that makes sense. I think it's good to have things that read really badly now and didn't read badly at the time, because it is a mark of progress. The show resonates because Michael reminds people of their bosses and people they work with, and maybe a little bit of themselves. And it's really important that people see that, like, you have to measure up to the moment that you're in. Oh, I like that. And it's really,
she's super
Rashida
smart.
Jones.
She's very smart.
And she's fun. I've interviewed her once or twice. She's a nice person.
She's lovely. She's lovely. I was a co-star of hers in I Love You, Man, so.
Oh, that's right. I love that movie. There is no problems with that movie.
Do you say that? Let's, you know, you say that. But
it's like, I think The Office just has this. But going to that, The Office was very progressive TV at the time. They had this episode, the coming out. Episode 2 of season 1 was titled Diversity Day. Granted, it's like straight up blatantly racist. And I really do feel like Hollywood as a whole watches that episode of The Office to dictate how to handle diversity in Hollywood, because it's terrible.
Thank you very much. Okay, thanks for filling these out, and I promise this will be quick. At Diversity Today, our philosophy is about honesty and positive expectations. We believe that 99% of the problems in the workplace arise simply out of ignorance.
You know what? This is a color-free zone here. Stanley, I don't look at you as another race.
See, this is what I'm talking about. We don't have to pretend that we're colorblind.
Exactly.
That's fighting ignorance with more ignorance. No, with more ignorance. Right, exactly.
It's bad. It's horrible. That,
suddenly, I understand so much more about Hollywood. I wish somebody would have told me that before. I've never seen this show up until now. I would have liked to have known that.
Yeah, I mean, I think this show, I still watch reruns of it until like a certain point. I think there's a certain point. And I loved it. And but then the episode before Benihana Christmas is called The Convict, in which Michael discovers that one of the other employees, Martin Nash, played by Wayne Wilderson, was an ex-convict. And then it just becomes a thing because he's Black.
That old chestnut line.
And it's just like it's like it's, but again, it's, I think it's because he is a clown that it is funny.
It was Steve Carell did an amazing job.
He did
Because he was able to, what, you know, what Ricky Gervais isn't, Steve Carell could bring warmth and true lovability. Like, that's not what Ricky Gervais brought to The Office. Again, I love both for different reasons. And I've seen every episode of The Office.
Yeah.
Like, people were like, when you were performing, how did you like pretend to like be into him? And it's like, oh, that was really easy. Like, that was not a problem for me. I'm like, he's great.
Like, well, no, I think what's also good is that to know that, like, your experience in the shooting of this episode wasn't anything toxic or anything. It was just comedy. It was just like good work, good people.
During lunches. During lunches, Harold Ramis told us like stories, like old stories, like about his like career. Like, it was fucking amazing. Yeah. Wait, were you gonna say
were you aware when you got the script and when you were shooting it that this isn't the greatest? You know, were you kind of also like, oh, this is funny, like, I get it?
It was everything all at once. And for me, it was only positive. Because even on the times when I've erased myself, like, and I take ownership of like erasing my culture and like wearing, you know, Vans and a flannel and skinny jeans at UCB on stage so I could look like everybody else, like, there, you know, I also own up to that, the agency within those parameters as well. So it was a, and when I say that everything that Kat Ann said is like totally true.
I actually understood why BIPOC actors play racist roles. You know, sometimes you gotta pay your rent. Sometimes you wanna join the union. Sometimes you just don't want your agent to drop you. Also, this episode was before, you know, wokeness.
I had a great time. Like, it was like a largely, to me, only positive experience.
Yeah, but I think we all go through these things where we kind of like, we need to kind of, especially in Hollywood and in media, play this game. Especially if you're a person of color, a queer person, anyone who is not a white, cis, het, able-bodied man, you know, it's like, we're like, for instance, when I got this job at Deadline, or not this job, when I got a job at Deadline, I was all, yay, I get to have benefits. I get to have, you know, but I didn't realize the impact I had. So I kind of exploited my place there. But then I learned very quickly that, oh, I'm really tokenized here. Like, I'm really like, they're underpaying me, but I think I need to be here. Like, I was all, this will be, it's like all, I need to be here for me. Whatever anyone else thinks of that is none of my business, but I need to be here for me. And I am aware of kind of the consequences or the whatever, you know, this thing has attached to me, like, for better or worse. So we all have to, I don't want to say we all have to do things we don't like, but we all have to do things we don't like.
And honestly, it wasn't until like I got to be on the other side of it. Like, you know, I mean, I wrote a Funny or Die short called Token. That it was something that I accepted until I there could be some sort of shift in power, you know, when I could start to choose and try to do something a little different, you know what I mean? But like, yeah, it's like until one gets to that place through circumstance, you kind of are grabbing what you can get. Like that's what it is. And I'm not saying it's right. And I think we're making changes towards that, but you don't.
It's not wrong either.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not wrong. Yeah, it's like, it is. I think we are still following the scarcity model of things when it comes to, you know, all of this stuff. I'm of the mind to burn it all down and just rebuild it, but I love chaos. I love mess.
Yeah, I saw that smoothie.
Oh, you know, it's almost gone, y'all. Ooh, y'all, if I am not alive tomorrow, you know why.
It looks like he put like a highlighter, a pink highlighter, and poured hot water into a smoothie.
Oh, you know what this looks like? This looks like that pink soap you have at the bathrooms, you know?
Yes, that, yes. That really
industrial pink soap is what he's drinking. Yeah, and by the way, we'll take your money gladly, whatever brand that is. Add to Cart is open for business.
Yes, absolutely.
We love drinking industrial strength pink.
I can recant so pink. Fast. Love to apologize.
You love.
Some people have a problem with it. I love to apologize.
Also, it's like, well, an episode, I guess, after or was no, it was this episode where he sings, "I got two tickets to paradise."
Yeah.
Apparently they got fined $60,000 by using that song. So they had to pay $60,000 for that joke. They could afford it. It was season three. It was a success by that time. Jen Sala said that on The Office Ladies as well. And also, I know this is like all out of left field, but what is y'all's relationship to Benihana?
Oh, I've always I enjoy it, but
that's
it's like
a great question. Guys, that is a great question.
I think, you know, respect to the Aoki family and all that they've like done. Oh, you know, big love to Rocky.
Rocky, Steve, Devin. Yes, we love you. You know,
so much love.
Happy Asian,
But I do feel like the meat is dry, you know, when we're there. I like the show. Of course, I love the show. But I think sometimes the show's maybe too long and the meat's on the grill a little too long.
Yeah, okay, you know, constructive criticism. We need to have this open dialogue with our community. So we know. Sujin,
never eaten at a Benihana.
Not at a grill thing.
No, I've never eaten at a grill thing like that where there's like a show, right? Isn't that part of Benihana?
Yeah, there's like shrimp. An onion volcano.
Volcano.
But shrimp gets flipped.
Yeah.
I did recently go to a friend's 40th big birthday and we had a big dinner and they hired, I don't think it was a Benihana person,
but
they hired someone to do that. And so I got to experience it and boy, that was, that went on too long. It was a little embarrassing. At one point, he threw a shrimp and you're supposed to catch it in your mouth.
Yeah.
And I was like, he came to me and I gave him the eye of like, if you even fucking think about it.
If you throw shrimp at my face.
If you throw shrimp
at my face. Fuck around and find out.
And I'm wearing a silk shirt.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. So he, you know, moved on and everybody had a good laugh. But, you know, I mean, I was like, this is fantastic for kids, but wholly undignified for a meal, you know?
I do remember, like, going to one for the first time and being all, ooh.
No, it's so fancy. Special
occasion. And then they come sing happy birthday. I always am hungry after because they do not give me enough food. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm Filipino. We eat that rice, bitch. You know, it's like
never enough rice at Benihana.
Never. Yeah.
I'm shocked. Is Benihana still? I mean, still a chain?
Yes.
Is there a Benihana in LA?
I feel like there's one in the valley that we shot in Encino. That's
the other thing.
Maybe we should go.
Incorrect, but I do feel like, do Benihanas exist in cities where there aren't like huge Asian populations?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Because that's what. It's very English. It's very English. What do they say when it angelicized? What is for white people?
Anglicized. Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. There is like, in the Bay Area, my family lives like hella East Bay, like San Ramon, Tri-Valley area. In Dublin, Pleasanton, this area, there is a, not a Benihana, but it's basically Benihana.
But you know, Dublin, Pleasanton, by the way, I lived there. Is very, there's a lot of whiteness there.
Yes.
That makes sense.
It works.
And I grew up also, I grew up in Union City. Way East Bay. Yes. That's Little Manila, they called it. And so I just felt like a Benihana wasn't something in our, you know what I mean? In our universe, like why would we pay money for bad Asian food that felt really fancy?
We
weren't the demographic. So I never had a chance to go to a Benihana. And now,
You know what?
And now my American dream shall be fulfilled in the in the valley. I will meet you too at a Benihana.
Yeah, we will go to a Benihana and we will spend all night there and we will reenact this whole ordeal.
The scene, I'll be the waiter. I'll be the waitress.
But like, did you appear in like the Benihana? Because I don't remember seeing you.
But I was there. I was there.
Oh.
And I think they had a shot of us. I guess now it's all coming back to me now. Like,
okay, Celine.
It's all coming back to me.
You're going to pay $60,000.
$60,000. $60,000. Sorry. We did not.
I feel like, they're like, they had a shot of me and Catherine, of us in the background and like us walking through and doing stuff. And so ones, not as cute.
Shrug.
Well, you know,
it's not there. They cut it.
Okay, because that whole joke didn't make the final.
No, it didn't. Yeah. People were very confused, actually.
I'm gonna rewatch. But you know, Kulop, Suchin, I know we could talk another hour, but we all have things to do. Mainly, I want to take a nap. Oh, and a dog.
Dog who says that? So. That's Georgia. That dog.
The Georgia was all, "Yo, bitch, it's time to go." Like, it's time. You've been talking about this episode too damn long. But thank y'all so much. And y'all recently have a live show that I couldn't attend. And I kind of was kicking myself because I was all free shit.
Yeah, you know? I mean, Dito, what's going on?
I was supporting my friend Travel Anderson's book launch. We see each other. Yeah.
Was he
AAPI Heritage Month?
This is really interesting. They are trans and Black. And they have this wonderful book that came out, and I've been supporting them. So they had this book launch, and I was all, I want to support. And so I supported them. But surprisingly, my Asian American Pacific Heritage Month, whatever it's called now, my dance card was kind of empty after Gold Gala. Like, I wasn't really doing anything. No shade to the community. I just was like, I guess I was just tired after the gala, because that gala took a lot out of us girls.
It did. It depleted me. And then also it's tough though, because, you know, hashtag WGA strike, hashtag WGA strong. Every event was very, you know, like promotional for projects that we can't, you know,
talk about. Well, like because I went from Gold Gala to Series Fest in Denver, and I was supposed to moderate panels for this new great show on Freevee called Primo. Don't worry, Georgia, we'll get off soon.
Primo, Mike Shore from The Office.
yeah. And then also I was supposed to do a Drag Race panel. The showrunner and writer backed out the day before, as well as the talent, so that panel got canceled. I landed. They said the Drag Race people pulled out, and even though they're unscripted, they were like, we just can't do it. So I loved what they did. They took local Denver drag queens, and then we watched an episode of Drag Race All Stars.
Oh, I love that.
And that was kind of a way to kind of promote Drag Race, but also still make it community. And then I went. Oh, this is why I'm so tired. And then I went to New York for the GLAAD Media Awards in New York. And then I came back here, and then I just haven't slept since. So no, I'm just joking. But no,
I've been May is a bit of a blur. It's a bit of a blur. Yeah.
But this is also part of the. I want to say it now. This is the official Asian Pacific American Heritage Month episode of Problematic Faith.
Gotta get it in there.
This is from the beginning. I just forgot to mention it. Sorry. This is from the beginning.
What a way to celebrate.
With these two lovely ladies. Thank you all so much for being vulnerable.
Thank you.
Being open to talk about. And also, Kula, just congratulations on doing this episode and living to tell the tale.
I'm alive, bitches.
So, and then do y'all, you're all on the socials. What do y'all want to drop, promote, or whatever, and whatnot, and what have yous?
Well, listen to Add to Cart wherever you get your fine podcasts, and follow us on Instagram Add to Cart Pod. And I'm I am Cool Up on Instagram,
and I am at Sujin Pak on Instagram.
Yes. Oh my god, y'all, it's only 2:17 and I'm exhausted. Okay, anyways, thank y'all so much for being
Sucha, just stay around and we'll just watch Dino slowly go into the bed.
The Problematic Fave podcast is presented by Diaspora and is created, hosted, and produced by Dino Ray Ramos. The series is also produced by Sanjay Sharma of Marginal Media Works and edited by Brian Aguilar. Special thanks to Cam. Subscribe to Problematic Fave on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to rate us. Diaspora is a media platform that amplifies intentionally exploited communities through its work. Follow Diaspora at Real Diaspora on Instagram and Twitter, or visit thediasporatimes.com. Follow Marginal at MRGNL Media on Instagram. You can send us all your problematic faves on social or email us at thisisdiaspora@gmail.com.